Ah, forever young. More a state of mind than anything else, really.
Annette Andre, ace actress and top correspondent, now live on the Midweek Drive.
Because she is forever young, aren't you, Annette?
I am.
Yeah, exactly. Well, I've just managed to successfully post a photograph of the Midweek Drivettes, Katie Dore and Tessa Snott, online now, so it's now actually officially public. Should you find yourself near a computer, I know it would apply to your good self, but not Arthur, because he doesn't really do computers. You can actually see the excitement of who two of the Midweek Drivettes are actually looking like. But, you know, you might want to save that, because there are lots of other things to be done, including the September audio missive from yourself, of course, in the joys of California. Not too far away from San Diego, of course. Wonderful. Why are you? Yes, you are close to San Diego. I wrote, I thought, oh, it's all getting very confusing here. Yes.
30 minutes down the road, we're in San Diego.
It's always important to actually just keep those things clearly to mind. So what, pray tell, Annette, are you about to share with us today on the Midweek Drive?
Okay, and this is the August talk, not the September talk.
Do you know, you see, this is why I said at the start of the show, time is just an illusion. And suddenly here I'm jumping ahead into a different month entirely. I don't know. It's where's that TARDIS when you need one? Really, it's outrageous. We'll put that there. Anyway, the August talk, I'll just rephrase that, the August Annette Andre talk.
Right. Okay, we're back to the old subject. Can Jane Goodall save the world from Donald Trump? Oh, gosh.
Yes.
You've seen those ascent of man charts showing how modern humans have climbed a ladder from low ape-like creatures to the species which includes Donald Trump as the pinnacle of evolution. Well, surely there's an oxymoron in there somewhere, or at the very least, a perfect excuse to examine some self-serving truths that we've been hoodwinked into believing are true. Mr. Trump has been castigated as a throwback, an unhinged Neanderthal, the missing link. All may be accurate, but do little in resetting the compass to a more realistic course. Defaming and demeaning our primate ancestors only deepens the mystery of how a Trump has managed to survive into the 21st century. Last week, I watched a TV documentary about Coco, the female gorilla, who for over 40 years has been communicating with her keeper using sign language. Coco is not the first captive ape to make busy work with her fingers and provide a career for charlatan academics. Typical of the breed is Coco's keeper, who bills herself as a social scientist. I say typical of the breed, because all who claim to be communicating with their animals appear to do business on a one-way street. The primate is taught a form of human language so that the trainer can say that they understand the inner workings of the ape's mind. Only once have I come across an animal behaviorist who has attempted to learn the primate's language as an entry into the animal's psyche. Instead of the chimps aping the responses it has been programmed to deliver, a primate allowed to communicate in its own tongue just might provide us with some usable insight into how our closest relations think and feel. That lone crusader is Jane Goodall, who has devoted her life not to humanizing primates, but to meeting them on their own territory and to treat them as companions, not laboratory subjects. And that brings me back to Mr. Trump and his unpresidential behavior. For the life of me, I can't fathom how all of us, from the pundits, the boffins, the TV talking heads, as well as my chiropodist, have not sussed that although Trump sounds as if he's speaking a version of English, in reality, his utterances have the unmistakable footprint of early primate. If this sounds like an intro to a stand-up routine, I assure you that I'm deadly serious, and I do mean deadly, as all of our lives the world over teeter on the unthinkable possibility that we just might end up in Trump's prehistoric clutches. Take a random sampling of his soundbite pronouncement. She's disgusting. He's weak. It's all rigged. guttural, explosive, all delivered with aggressive body language and facial contortions that mimic those BBC nature shows of chimps and apes' behavior when hunting or hurting. Trump is clearly operating on impulses and directives from his old brain, a holdover we all share with the evolved modern job that sees us through most of life's challenges. Pardon me. Hold on. Sip of water needed.
We just take that momentary break there for a moment. You see, you're being punished. No, it's just keep it together. It'll work well. we're still sorting through that. Oh, dear Lord. Breaking news, Annette, just in case you haven't actually heard, that Nigel Farage, of course, from UKIP, is to share a stage with Donald Trump to discuss the Republican presidential candidate's views on Brexit, really.
Is it UKIP or has he resigned again? I lose track.
There you go.
Yeah, he will.
Wait till you hear the rest of this.
Well, then, are we ready to continue? Off we go.
Yes. But problems arise when, as in Donald Trump's case, the old brain is dominant, its primitive messages sending only the basics needed for survival. Aggressive dominance and ruthless retribution against all who challenge his leadership. Jane Goodall has studied chimps in the wild and is intimate with their daily behavior. In books, articles, and lectures, she has charted the complex levels of chimpanzee society, paying particular attention to the role of the alpha males in each troop, as the family groups are called. As the dominant alpha male in the bush asserts his authority over his troop, so does Trump think of his followers as a troop, all blindly buying into his rants that he, and only he, has the power to save them from the enemy who has stolen their dreams and kidnapped their futures. No amount of Republican arm twisting has deterred Trump from veering off their tone-deaf platform, nor has the increasing number of his defectors seemed to give him pause. In fact, as a chimp alpha male would deal with challenges, Trump doubles down in his lunatic behavior and adds to the turmoil he leaves in his wake. So how could Jane Goodall be civilization's savior? What could an aging woman whose life has been devoted to understanding and protecting our forebears do to arrest the nightmare possibility of a sign rising above the White House reading Trump Tower Annex? In the simplest and most direct terms, she could translate the key vocal phrases and behavior that rids the troop in the wild of an alpha male who's outlasted his sell-by date. By instructing the Republican and Democratic leaders to adopt and adapt those methods in a bipartisan union, I'm certain, given Trump's mirror-deep self-image, he'd cut and run to salvage the tatters of his ego and empire. In the bargain, both sides might realize how close their bad behavior has brought the world to the brink of disaster. For those who doubt the looming tsunami should Trump become president, I can assure you that a reissue of The Planet of the Apes would win next year's Oscar for Best Documentary Feature. Sorry about all my sort of stumbling around, but it must have been the coughing.
It added to the quality of the emotion. I think it pays dividends on that basis.
Whenever I speak of Trump, I do get somewhat
choked,
anxious, and override my words. Yes.
Well, just think of Nigel Farage and Donald Trump and the mustache all on the same stage. It's quite right. Mustache and the hair. The hair and the mustache. Extraordinary.
Oh, I know.
Still, if ever there was an ideal, prescient aspect and a precursor to the writer and editor of The Art of Ice Age, what better way to actually connect with that? Katie, any thoughts on Annette's deeply felt views there in terms of the Trump and Republican Party? Because clearly you are our go-to girl when it comes to the monthly 2-hour epics that are produced after this very show, in fact, the next one, I think, coming up a couple of weeks' time, actually.
Is it?
September the 7th, I know. Yeah, it's extraordinary. Any thoughts
on
yourself?
Who is?
It's a two-hour production that's produced by our managing editor of Siren, Andrew David, who does... Well, Katie, how would you describe the American presidential election on Siren FM?
It's a two-hour discussion with US contributors as well as British contributors about sort of what's going on in US politics, and obviously the Brexit vote over here has been quite a topic, and particularly trying to take sort of a young person's perspective on it. So we've got two brilliant young presenters, Kai and Maisie, who tell us sort of what younger people, younger voters are thinking. So.
Not that you're that old yourself, of course.
I must say, it amazes me that anybody can actually stand there and try to give any sort of ideas or arguments to
in
do
favour.
With Trump. I mean, we hear them here, you know, all the time. They're always talking for or against. And I think, why? I mean, you just look with your mouth open and that's enough, frankly.
The words beggar's belief spring to mind, but
it's just
work our way through it. That's the important. If all else fails, we can always just work our way through it in a different process. And it has to be said that even the American presidential election program, hosted by Andrew David, has never actually brought in the Simeon question.
It hasn't, but I just wanted to say thank you so much, Annette, for talking about Jane Goodall and her approach and giving her the credit for wanting to understand another species on its terms rather than on ours. She's someone
Absolutely.
Who's been a huge inspiration to me in my life. She's the reason I ended up doing the degree that I did, which is social anthropology, and she's an amazing woman. And I just wanted to say thank you, really, for you giving, you know, for mentioning her, because she's a remarkable woman.
Oh, yeah. Well, it seemed, you know, such an obvious thing. I mean, you just watch this ridiculous Neanderthal up on the thing, and then you think of the...
chimpanzees.
And when I saw the documentary of Coco, you know, and here they are saying how wonderful they are because they're using sign language with this poor gorilla who's been kept captive by the woman for... I mean, she treats him well, obviously. Treats her well, rather. But there she is, supposedly... You know, you teach sign language to an ape very quickly. They're very quick. They're very clever. That's all it is. They're not. They sit there and laugh at you, saying, when are you going to get around to talking about letting me talk to you?
I always want to know what real choices Coco is allowed to make for herself. And I think that...
I doubt very, very few. They've all been taught and planted in there. And... It's by rote. It's like teaching an elephant to lift its leg because they've got to do the feet, you know, and they say it's husbandry, but it's actually a show that they're putting on. And it's you teach by a lot of inhumane methods, but I don't say that with her. I'm sure she's been quite humane. I mean, I'm not saying that about her at all. But they do it.
It's a fascinating insight into, obviously, behaviourism and a whole heap of other scenarios. I think it's just good that animals allow us the privilege of sharing the planet with them. Tessa, any thoughts from yourself?
Absolutely.
I just think the text that you read made politics sound a little more interesting. I just love listening to your voice. You're an incredible... You read so well.
She is a trained actress, of course, from Australia.
I think I've said this before.
The occasional splutter on an occasional basis is inconsequential.
There were a lot of splutters today.
At one point, I actually was listening and I thought, oh, this is a pre-recording. And then obviously when you coughed, it was like, no, it's live. And you literally do get lost while you're talking.
Quite right.
Yeah.
Critical stuff next week, of course.
Well, thank you. That was lovely.
those are the kind of...
Poor Alex is trying to get a word in. Normally it's the other way around.
Yeah.
Those are the kind of director's notes that some folk would actually, you know, commit harry-carry for. Wonderful stuff. But as ever, splendid material. Up next, Tara Bennett, the writer, editor and academic, discussing her latest awesome text. And I use that quite deliberately, The Art of Ice Age. That's the movie. So that'll be coming up in a matter of seconds from now. But that means that... Tessa, is it Katie? I don't know. Katie, last two questions for Annette, please.
Annette, have you had a reasonably interesting telephonic link with us today?
Oh, definitely.
Will you be joining us again soon?
Of course so well.
Absolutely. Next week, of course, slightly earlier, Arthur Weingarten will be showing his thoughts, views and appreciations of the whole thing. It's amazing. You know, Arthur already, I believe, just keenly working on the script and getting everything else sorted through from that point of view. Arthur tends to be more improv, you know, and Annette is method. She's kind of like the classic sort of method actress. Arthur, I feel, is always a bit more improv, a bit more kind of Lee Strasberg, really. But, you know, it's all good. All that's the whole thing. It's 12 and it's 13 minutes past 6 o'clock here in Lincoln. And up next, as we said, Tara Bennett. Happy trails, Annette. Keep on looking after the chimpanzees.
Thank you.
And at the moment that that lost human infant is returned to the tribe by, of course, the mammoth and the sloth. And, of course, indirectly, of course, Diego, the saber-toothed tiger. Heart-rending, heart-rending. So good, you just have to get hold of a copy of The Art of Ice Age to appreciate the wonderment of Ice Age in 2002 and a heap of other goodies. Isn't that right? Creator and author and academic extraordinaire of The Art of Ice Age, Tara Bennett.
Thank you. Thank you so much.
It was a magical moment when I could actually go to the Royal Mail Post Offices in Middlesbrough, England, 126 miles north of Lincoln, England, to actually collect the package that had emerged thanks to your kind offices, Tara, and of course Titan Books, of both Ice Age, The Art of Ice Age, and indeed The Blacklist. But we're going to talk about Ice Age first. We're going to shine the light on the positivity that comes through within that, because I was discussing Ice Age with Tessa Snart. A matter of moments before the show was out, Tessa.
We was having this discussion.
Indeed. We were set during the Ice Age. A saber-toothed tiger, a sloth and a woolly mammoth find a lost human infant and they tried to return him to his tribe. When you've got that, what needs do you have of Nigel Farage and Donald Trump going live on air to talk about Brexit? You know, this is serious stuff here. But currently...
Exactly. If they can show peace and coming together, then I think they're an example for all.
Exactly so. Tessa and Katie, you're currently looking at the Hallowed Text itself. Katie, your thoughts?
It's an absolutely beautiful book. It's really lovely.
It is the book to have in any Christmas wish list, really.
The illustrations, they're amazing, aren't they? And the colours.
The illustrations, the colours, the scenario and the whole thing. Even the actual introduction with the producer of the whole sequence is just awesome in every sense of it. And I actually realised, Tara, that we'd actually got to a stage where originally Blue Sky were looking to actually produce a drama of Ice Age until 20th Century Fox said, no, it's got to be a family-friendly comedy.
Exactly, yeah. You know, Blue Sky, they started in the commercial world, and this was the idea that was going to turn them into a theatrical company. And, they were looking at a more dramatic path, and Fox, who has always been a distributor for Blue Sky Films, said, you know, no, let's do something funny. And that's really what kind of turned the tide and allowed them to explore what could be funny about the Ice Age. And then
you know, really figuring out the characters and the environments and what you could do. And, you know, this is really at the kind of very early stages of computer animation that we take for granted. For, you know, Pixar and, you know, DreamWorks and Blue Sky, you know, they did a very heightened and very stylized kind of look because of the technology, because of what they could do, you know, rather than taking more years than it already takes to make a movie. There's so many different things that impacted the way that first movie looks. And one of my favorite things about the book is that it really, over five movies, tracks exactly how far they've come as artists that have been able to take what they put on a page and absolutely translate it with all of the depth and all of the detail work into now a 3D lush computer animated world. And that, for me, talking to all the designers and looking at all the art and getting to see it all in one book really shows an evolution that I think is rare. You know, whether or not a franchise happens is a special thing, either in live action or animation. But, you know, with five movies and all of these short films for the Ice Age world, that book allows us to really look at it as a piece and see where the company has gone, where the artists have gone, and then just where the characters have gone, which is so much fun. I'm an animation nerd, so for me, you know, aside from the joy of writing it, I just really enjoyed being able to see how the industry's changed and how art has changed in this medium for computer animated movies.
Laurie Forte, of course, the producer, again keeping that notion of the excellent work you actually did in terms of showrunners, producer, kind of similar sort of role when you're talking about the movie. I think mm-hmm. Roy writes an excellent introduction to the book, and quite rightly so. Tessa, your thoughts on what you're looking at present?
I.e.
the book.
We're just looking at Gone Nutty. So,
I mean, what's not to appreciate when you've got Scrat, the character that's actually is there, the Scrat image. If I appreciate it so much, I decided to rewatch both Ice Age 1 and Ice Age 2. Going on to 3 and 4 would have been too much, but I just forgot how good and well-crafted the stories actually were, and what a wonderful metaphor and allegory for actually getting on with different characters, whether you're a mammoth, whether you see yourself as a sloth called Sid, or whether you actually see yourself as a saber-toothed tiger who's, you know, possibly got to go through his own package if you're called Diego. It's just a different thought. Katie, have you seen the movie?
I've seen the first one, right. And really enjoyed it, but I haven't seen the others. One of the things that's intriguing, I love, there's what they call colour keys in here, Tara, and they're mm-hmm. beautiful mm-hmm. images. Are they literally just so the animators sort of have colour references, or?
Well, when they make an animated movie, they consider it incredibly important for them to basically work out the days. You know, so as we're taking for granted watching a film that they just move from one environment to the other, they actually look at the time, and those color keys help them understand that they are basically conceptually and literally following a breadth of time that makes sense logically, and that also allows them to have a place where you'll see the story goes. So you'll definitely see in those color keys for every single film where they start, where the tonal colors are, where they want them to go, what is the harmonious or maybe the thematic colors for the entire movie. For the newest movie, there's a lot of purple, and that's very representative of the asteroids that are coming down that are changing the landscape, and then also representing an area that they're going to go to. So for them, the color keys are incredibly important for them to track a lot of minutiae, and also to make sure that that they aren't staying in a color family for too long. Because if we were to all look at a white wall as the, you know, most extreme example, we get really bored with that really quickly. And our eyes will do the same if we're watching an animated movie, which is completely constructed for us, just looking at the same color harmony the entire length of 80 minutes. So it's really important for them to make sure that we're going to different places visually. That keeps us excited as viewers, and for them it allows them to really track all of those visual guides and metaphors and visual prompts for us to be able to go through the film and watch the arcs and watch the emotional highs and track those in a visual sense. It's really fascinating. It's kind of the science of color for them.
Let's take an 82-second break as we actually start with the opening sequence to Ice Age with David Newman, whose music we actually heard before. But if you sort of feel as though the need to migrate is coming upon your person... So we know that the first animal to step on Scrat is a mammoth, yet no mammoth is visible in the long shot of the crowds of animals. We know that a large bird also steps on Scrat, but no birds are seen in the crowds. But you're just going to let this thing go, haven't you, Tara? You know, it's always spotting the goofs, etc. But please, sometimes you just got to step beyond that whole scenario there. Folk who are actually listening to this and say, how can we get hold of the first Art of Ice Age book that's out of the Art of Ice Age? Well, as introducing the world to three Sub-Zero heroes. We've heard about them. Manny the Mammoth, Sid the Sloth, and Diego the Sabretooth Tiger. The strangest herd its prehistoric inhabitants had ever seen, along with nut-obsessed squirrel Scrat. This book celebrates the art behind all four movies in the blockbuster series, along with the short films. I was going to say, did you? Because I haven't actually managed to work my way through the text in full as yet, but presumably the Easter egg hunt that we had, the Christmas festival special that we've actually had, and of course that exclusive in-depth look at the upcoming fifth movie, Collision Course, which critics have been a bit unkind about, it has to be said. I haven't seen it myself, so I can't comment, but it does seem as though people are saying hasn't quite worked as much as the earlier ones did.
Yeah, there's a lot of people that haven't felt like it's their favorite, and you know, it's 5 years into the whole arc. It definitely finishes up a storyline that they've been pursuing in terms of Manny and his family and his daughter Peaches as she's growing older. You know, and I think that they as a company also were looking at it being kind of a swan song. I don't think, you know, Scrat is now the official mascot for Blue Sky, so it definitely, you know, it's never going to go away. And I'm sure that Scrat and other iterations will, and maybe even down the line they could come back to it. But yeah, I think, you know, when I'm making an art book, it's really, you know, if you're an Ice Age fan, wonderful. But it's also it's a really cool little niche where there are art students, there are animators, there are, you know, from all the companies, you know, from Pixar to Leica to every place that is currently making, you know, animated entertainment nowadays, and they love seeing what each other is doing. And you know, being able to write these books is kind of also for a very inside niche of people who are working so hard on what they're doing. They don't get to see how other films evolve, and these books really provide that. And that's one of the prides that I have in doing art books, and especially working with the Blue Sky team, is that a lot of these people have been with Blue Sky since it first started. And that is when Ice Age started, you know, 14 years ago, 15 years ago. And they've stayed, you know, and they've gone on to direct their own films in the company and come up through the ranks. And it's really just wonderful to be able to highlight those people that, you know, we may know Chris Wedge because he's the guy that, you know, directed the first movie. He actually voices Scrat. And, you know, Lori Forte, who, you know, came up with, like you said, the idea of Ice Age and shepherded the stories along. But the books also highlight every single one of the developmental artists and a lot of the people along the path that elevate the characters in between movies and, you know, slightly adjust them for time and then create new characters like Pete DeCive, who worked on developing the look of all of the characters from the beginning. And so you get to see their sketch work, you get to see their evolution work, you get to see their landscapes, their designs, the 3D artists that actually turn those things into actual environments that have actual depth and weight. So it's really, you may not love all of the films, but if you are a fan of artistry, you're a fan of the characters, these books really allow you to just sink into it and hopefully inspire the next generation of artists out there that say, oh my gosh, I see what they're doing and I'd love to do that too, which would make me very, very happy if my books, any of them, could be a conduit to the next animators going out there pursuing their dreams.
I think they will. In fact, that was one of the reasons why I asked Paul Terry, obviously co-writer of several of your wonderful classic texts, to actually just hold fire until he rejoins us on the show until next week. And he was kind enough to say, yes, obviously, Tara mm-hmm. Bennett has to have Pride of Passage in this. Because Tara multitasks. She even actually puts up a Facebook thing saying she's talking to Siren FM now about the book, The Art of the Ice Age Movies. It's fantastic stuff, though. And we know there are other art of movies out there, but ultimately The Art of the Ice Age is the number one. That's face it, it's classic in every sense of the word. Katie, any other final thoughts for Tara?
I just think it's such an inspiring book for any artist to look at in terms of the variety of different sort of styles of art that are in there, and also being able to see, you know, that the real top end professionals developing concepts and playing with concepts. It's certainly kind of, things aren't perfect when they start out and they just get refined and keep being worked on. Yeah, it's a really inspiring book.
The constant evolution. And would you like to share with us, Tara, the names of the two gentlemen that you've actually included in terms of the little sort of line there? I suspect they are movie people who are connected with the Ice Age scenario. Who are they?
Which ones? I'm not sure.
One's got a beard on and one hasn't. And one's holding hovering. He's got his hand over a computer mouse. This may have nothing to do with you, Tara.
So I'm not sure who that is.
How extraordinary is that? Yeah, that's so amazing. It was computer animation, and there we are. We've actually had how surreal, you know? It's just amazing. Never mind. That's the uncertainty that will bring Phil Leonis another question to be answered in the never-ending question of is it 8:30?
Technology.
It's amazing. Heaps of other things to actually go through, but Tara, we've already hopefully booked you for a return to the production in a couple of weeks' time to talk about the wonderful next classic book, The Blacklist. Ooh, we're very excited.
Yes.
But Katie, would you like to put those last two questions to Tara, please?
Tara, have you had a reasonably interesting telephonic link with us today?
Oh, yes. Thank you so much. I have.
Will you be joining us again soon?
Yes, please.
Exactly.
I'd love to come back.
2 weeks. I haven't even had a chance to talk about SFX magazine, the go-to magazine for all sorts of other wonderful things. I thought we'd have to hold it back, given that we're attending the Starburst International Film Festival over the weekend. I don't want to get the Starburst people upset with SFX. And you, as you know, Tara, it's a bit like sort of one otter actually sort of thinks you prefer it over another otter. It can be a nightmare. So best to sort of steer away from that. Yeah, exactly. We love them all.
Good.
That's the important thing. It's like Manny. It's like all sorts of things. A round of applause for Tara Bennett and this fantastic book, The Art of Ice Age, which is available to actually purchase now from all online stores and so on and so forth. Up next, hopefully, Phil Leonis.
Any dimensionally transcendental police box could ever wish for.
just in case you're expecting something completely different to emerge, much like this.
10:30 a.m. in L.A. can only mean it's time for the Midweek Drive team to welcome their top Californian cultural correspondent, Phil Leonis, back for another segment of Cultural Perspicacity.
Yay! Although it has to be said, this week I haven't had a chance to listen to Chilpack Hollywood Hour number 484, partly through choice and partly because, as indeed Tessa Snart will confirm, having had the views of Suicide Squad being panned and routine, at the end of the day, Lois Snart liked Suicide Squad.
She did.
There we are.
She went to see it the other day.
She's the one. She's the one. The other person in the UK who saw it, as you know from listening to past weeks of our show, has apparently sued it for lying in advertising. And one of the people who wants to kind of sue the movie, but he can't. But he's doing everything he can to get out of his contract from the DC Cinematic Universe. And we talk about it. Is Jared Leto, who's the basis of this lawsuit, because his Joker. Many people feel betrayed that they were led to believe he was a character in the film, and then it turns out he really isn't.
Well, he is, Phil. He is.
So they lied to him that never had any intention of those scenes being in the movie. They were shot literally just for advertising. He shot a bunch of things that he was promised, and then we got into a very interesting discussion because our friend Tom Hardy, who of course is recently was in the great Mad Max Fury Road,
and was Shinzon in Star Trek Nemesis.
He shredded the script and sent it back to them. That was his way of saying no. And then the official release was, oh, he has scheduling conflicts. But he kind of read the blitz on this because they were promising that his character, Rick Flagg, would be the lead in it. And apparently what we're uncovering is many versions of the script went out to actors to get them into different movies than what they were actually signing up for.
And isn't that
which is astounding. And then I'm shocked to find out that the movie could be the worst thing ever made. What a shock. But anyway, thank God it's going to lose them. You know, at some point, Warner's is going to just, at some point, they're going to say, you know, losing hundreds of millions of dollars on these things each time and having people hate us maybe is not the combination we want. But, Alex, enough about that and cultural failures. First of all, you letting us know on these shores that the Four Tops, mm-hmm. going loco down in Acapulco, that the Four Tops had an album in 2010, who knew? You knew, and you're letting us know, and they come from these shores. So thank you for that.
I like to keep the joy and the happiness working through that process, because, as
and
I said...
And you, when you introduced me, you said the words almost exactly, and now for something completely different.
Mm.
And when I think of that, I always think of course, Monty Python and the Flying Circus, and it was as if you had reached into my brain and pulled out what I wanted to speak of. Because at the Los Angeles Breakfast Club this morning, our presenter was someone who really needs to become a regular fixture on the Midweek Drive. Someone who initially hails from your shores, though she has become a citizen of the U.S. Don't hold that against her. Rosemary Lord, who's the historian of the Los Angeles Women's Club, an organization in its 111th year, an organization whose piano player was a young man by the name of Charlie Chaplin, who used to play piano for their meetings in the Los Angeles Breakfast Club, or Los Angeles Women's Club. But Rosemary Lord, of course, when she was introduced, knew her because, among other things, she was on several episodes of Monty Python, Flying Circus. She played a guardian on Doctor Who. She's an acclaimed actress and author, and now Los Angeles historian. Who could be better for the Midweek Drive, is what I'm thinking.
Phil, as you know, the Leonis recommendations have got a platinum seal to them, and if you use the wonderful magic of putting us in touch and contact, we will welcome that opportunity.
I will do that. I will actually get on that, because she is quite honestly too good for Chilpack Hollywood Hour, why I would need to hand her off.
A quick question for you, Phil, before we get into the Midweek Drivettes, who have been doing fantastic, sterling duty today. Finland or China? China or Finland?
So this is what kind of tea I prefer?
No, it's just a case of where do you feel drawn, Finland or China?
Is Helsinki in Finland?
Mm-hmm, yeah.
Is it? See, I I'm American. We're not taught geography. It is absolutely true that apparently one out of three Americans can't even find the United States on a globe. And half of them
Why would you
are
need
pilots.
To?
Half of them are pilots for American Airlines. So that's the terrible thing about it. But so am I right? Is Helsinki in Finland?
Yeah. Katie, Finland or China?
Finland.
I'm going to go Finland because Helsinki was just listed as one of the 10 most livable cities in the world.
And presumably, Tessa, you're going Finland.
Yeah,
so despite the fact that I like Chinese, they only come up to your knees, but I like Chinese. We've gone Finland.
Finland. The country where I want to be, pony trekking or camping, or just watching TV. Finland. It's the country for me. You're so near to Russia, so far from Japan, quite a long way from Cairo, lots of miles from Vietnam. Finland, the country where I want to be, eating breakfast or dinner, or snack lunch in the hall. Finland has it all. You're so sadly neglected, and often ignored, a poor second to Belgium when going abroad. Finland. The country where I quite want to be. Your mountains so lofty, your treetops so tall. Finland has it all.
Oh, together, Finland files!
Finland. The country where I quite want to be. Your mountains so lofty, your treetops so tall. Finland has it all. Finland has it all.
And when Penny Evans can actually come up with a line saying, "I fell in love with a prehistoric squirrel and his nuts," you realise that all's well with the world. Don't worry, Penny, I've been very keen to follow up your radio drama as well, which is going to be wondrous. Phil, did you feel as though Finland was the right choice for you there to spiritually take you away from the negativity of Suicide Squad?
Well, which was longer? Whichever one was longer would have been the right choice because I was handed something I had to edit during the middle of it. So... If it was shorter, I chose unwisely.
But they mentioned pony trekking, and any song that includes a rhyme with pony trekking is a winner, as far as I'm concerned.
Well, that's basic rule one of songwriting.
Absolutely, as much pony trekking reference as you can get in there.
Bear that in mind, because it's only a matter of days before the Burley International Horse Trials will be emerging in all sorts of ways. Oh, the excitement. Anyway, sadly, Phil, you're not going to be in Manchester this weekend for the first ever Starburst International Film Festival.
How could you?
I know. Like, how am I not hosting that? That would have been a John Glenn retrospective?
Oh,
my goodness. Like, I don't understand how I hadn't heard about that. Not that I have any, but it's like, it says old movies, too. Like, I should have bundled together some of my back catalogue and...
Phil, if only you'd kept up to date with the Midweek Drives podcasts, you would not have an excuse, you see. There we are.
It's case so 10, hard. You know, once I finally deliver the identifications that I'm supposed to, this is day 5 of trying to export them. We're having computer problems. But once I finally get that off my agenda, then I can... finally get back to listening to the podcasts that make my life worth living.
Well, there we are, you see. And, of course, the greatest news that we've had as well is that Tessa has just wrapped up the second of Sound and Country Vision, which actually gets it airing a week tomorrow, actually, on Thursday, September the 1st, 7:02 p.m. as far as Zulu time is concerned. That's using the JAG operative thing, so Zulu time, based on Greenwich Mean Time. I feel that's the easiest way to actually...
I missed part of Tara Bennett One of the reasons I missed it was because of the at regular intervals loud beeping sound that came during her.
I think it's just the popularity of Tara. Exactly.
Yeah.
Beep.
So, you know that our national security agency is now eavesdropping on your conversations with her. Because Art of Ice Age triggers so many of their anti-terrorist warnings in their presentation. But anyway, I did not. If you brought this up, I didn't hear it. Will she be in attendance at Dragon Con, selling her books and promoting her books? I was wondering.
Do you know, we didn't actually manage to get that message out as yet. We didn't mention Dragon Con. Tell us, pray tell, when does Dragon Con emerge, Phil?
Well, it's not this coming weekend, but the following weekend, or as it's kind of known in our circle here, it's Nerd Burning Man. Mm-hmm. And it's people around the world tend to know of Comic-Con in San Diego now because it has become such a big corporate event. You know, all the studios put so much money into promoting their movies there. And so everyone tends to hear of it because the panels will get shown around the world and things like this. But a far better attended convention, and one that still kind of lives according to the roots of San Diego Comic-Con, is Dragon Con in Atlanta. It's the largest attended popular culture convention in the world, but it's entirely fan-run. There is no corporate interest, so the studios can't figure out exactly how to take advantage of it because there's no one to pay off. And so it's hundreds of thousands of people descend upon Atlanta, downtown Atlanta, on Labor Day weekend. It's Labor Day weekend. So
September the 2nd to September the 5th.
Mm. Yes. Yeah. So in Atlanta, it's really the temperature would be like what you would expect from Manila in the Philippines in the middle of summer. It's ungodly hot and 100% humidity, and you have people, all of them, dressed in laborious, painstakingly crafted costumes so that they can appear as their favorite characters in popular culture, and these people celebrate their various fandoms. And it's quite something to behold. And by day three, after everyone's been up all night drinking and partying, it's actually quite something to smell, too, by day three. But that's going on this weekend, and what's great about it is, like I said, largely because of the absence of corporations figuring out exactly how to exploit it, there are panels about movies that are coming out, and there are trailers that are shown, and there are celebrities that are there signing autographs. But the real action tends to be with authors and artists and illustrators and gaming and costumers and just really immersing oneself in the love of all the different aspects of their fandom, not just, hey, look at the stars from this movie series who want to sell you something new. It's really quite refreshing.
The largest multimedia popular culture convention focusing on science fiction, fantasy, gaming, comics, literature, art, music, and film in the universe, celebrating 30 years, Dragon Con, 1987 to 2016, and still going. And I really feel, because every year we've done the San Diego Comic Con, or at least one correspondent who's actually been from that point of view. But yes, you've just reminded us, Phil, we clearly should have actually mentioned this as well. Katie, were you familiar with Dragon Con?
I heard about it on Twitter. I'd seen a few people tweeting saying that they were going to be there. I think Gillian Anderson's going and has asked people to donate to charity rather than bring her gifts and things, which sort of caught my attention, so I thought it was lovely.
That's Gillian Anderson, you say. She's an all-round wonderful person.
Yeah, a lot of people, also I think a portion of the, you know, the money, the tickets and everything does go to support charity. Of course, Alex, you and many Midweek Drivettes know Dragon Con firsthand from the footage that was shot there in the epic documentary The Truth Is Out There.
Of course, this is very true, which was finally given two thumbs up by Emma Tinson. I may well sort of pass the mantle on to Tessa to also catch a view of the fabulous Truth Is Out There from that point of view. I see Annie.
I would have loved, so it was Tessa that gave it on her own two thumbs up, because, you know, the phrase two thumbs up refers to two different people, but I would have been far more intrigued if Tessa gave it both a thumbs up and a thumbs down. That would be really interesting.
And that's why Annie Snart actually says, lovely pics, Tess. It all looks very technical. Hope you had a good day. Hasn't finished yet. You know, still another 9 minutes to go. You know, squeeze the juice out of every moment. Well, she heads back to Glinton, just outside Peterborough.
Yeah.
Anyway, Tessa, any other questions you'd like to put either in a thumbs up or thumbs down approach to Phil, who clearly has once again torn into Suicide Squad, even though we managed to veer him off via Finland and Dragon Con?
Well, I was going to tie in the flower show here, and I was just wondering if you've been to a flower show, or what sort of, in terms of vegetables and flowers, what shows do you have over in the States? Because I'm sure you grow like pumpkins or like in the films,
humongous.
The American films. Yeah, you see them; they're huge. Yeah. So, have you been to any?
No, I grow nothing.
Oh.
I kill plants quite well. I'm your guy. If there's some lovely plant that you need to die. And it's not like I won't tend to it. I'll tend to it, but I just what's the opposite of a green thumb? A black hard-bitted thumb is what I have.
See, inevitably, what he needs then is to go to plants on the dark side of the North of England Horticultural Society scenario. Because they're dealing with plants that you can use to poison people. Plants which are only glow in the dark.
They're not even blooming now,
Blooming. They're
just...
You know, I think this might be your way of saying what they said to me when I was the guest host. I was the guest host at the Los Angeles Breakfast Club. I had to do double duty, filling in for our usual MC and for the chaplain. And so I dressed the part, I thought, a lovely mauve tie, a black striped suit. And as soon as I get there, our club secretary says, "You're dressed as if you're going to speak to a Satanist church." And I, of course, wondered, how did she know about the midweek drive?
Word gets around, I guess.
Whoa. I did say, Katie, we couldn't actually have that goat sacrificed in the studio. It's offensive to Capricorn.
Spoiling my fun.
It's what happens.
I do like goats, actually. Goats are lovely. Apologies to any goats that thought out there.
I grow goats. That's what I do. I go to goat shows. I grow goats. I've never been to a flower show. Are they great? Great fun going to a flower show. What does one do at a flower show?
I really want a flower show to be like a dog show, in that people run around a ring with a big vase of flowers nice pin.
Or triffids, of course, who could actually run themselves.
That'd
technically, as well as stinging people, assuming they've been watching the Perseids and get blind as a result. Sorry, John Wyndham. I know that's a sort of summation of the whole sort of Wyndham classic, which you rewrote in The Kraken Wakes, but there we are. That's the day of the triffids. The dark side on the garden, you can explore horticulture from a weird and wonderful world of carnivorous plants, sinister secrets of the pretty but poisonous scenarios. It's amazing.
See, that's fantastic. Because as someone who grew up a Star Trek fan, Alex, you know that pretty much my whole relationship to flowers is the lovelier they are, the quicker I think they're going to shoot out poison and darts at me.
And how much has Starfleet invested in your education as an academic and indeed a filmmaker, Phil? You know, millions, millions. Tessa, number between 2 and 27, please.
21.
Very good. Will it have a PS? Who knows? The universe, possibly.
To set the record straight, however cool you think it might be to have an out-of-body experience floating over your house, flying through space, traversing the past, present, and future, let me tell you, it'll never be as cool as being in the one you now have. Walking barefoot in the grass, floating on a sun-drenched pool, or dancing alone in the dark. You so fly the universe. Trust me, from here, getting into body is considered the most sacred of all sacreds.
As many people have said, we're not human beings on a spiritual journey, we're spiritual beings on a human journey. Thought I'd just drop that in there. I forget who actually came up with that whole scenario. It was a wonderful... Teilhard de Chardin. There we are, in case you're wondering, a well-known sort of French philosopher, Teilhard de Chardin. Moving on, Penny Evans has actually said the Drivettes will have to watch The Lady Killers. With a little wink, she said there.
I
don't know whether Phil's given permission to actually share it. I mean, I have seen it and watched it, and we'll be talking. It did extraordinary in all sorts of ways. No spoilers. But
don't you think they have to get a little bit older?
How chronologically gifted would you say?
As an educator, I feel like you could get into trouble.
I'm almost speechless, but not quite, because as far as Siren is concerned, Siren Cinema is focusing on The Hunger Games with Patrick Adams. after the news. In the old slot that used to be, of course, the soundtrack show for all healthy 4 weeks or four editions that it sort of went through.
It's not gone, it's just...
in hibernation.
It's resting.
It's okay, resting. That's the important thing. So, Katie, would you like to put those last two questions to Phil Learness, please?
Phil, have you had a reasonably interesting telephonic link with us today?
This was great fun.
Will he be back soon?
Yes, I will be back in a week's time. Mm-hmm. And my request is next time Tara Bennett is on the show, Alex, can you ask her about her book about the making of Big Trouble in Little China? Because that's one of my favorite underappreciated, undervalued films. Near and dear to my heart because it's a film that was very far ahead of its time and therefore really poorly received, which is something I'm getting used to. Anyway, if you would ask her about that, that would be great fun.
Phil, I think I'd go one better because I think we have the co-author Paul Terry who's live on the show next week together with our Irish song people who'll be there as well and indeed an ace baker and in general chef as well, Linda Hewitt. So you may only have to wait 7 days for that as opposed to the 14 days
when
Tara returns. Yeah, you see.
I thought it was too much to ask. Can you please combine a conversation about John Carpenter's little scene masterpiece with a discussion of baked goods? But if you can combine those, I mean, that's radio right there.
That's all you need. We continually push those boundaries. That's the important thing. Katie, have you enjoyed your time on the programme today?
It's been fab.
Excellent. All set, psyched ourselves up for the Manchester Starburst International Festival.
Absolutely.
Excellent. That'll be happening very shortly. And what about yourself, Tess? It's been 3 hours of extraordinary sort of hard work and scenario from the early hours production of Sound and Country Vision to 2 hours of Midweek Drive. Has it been worth the journey from Glinton?
Oh, it most definitely has. It's gone super fast.
That's a bit like life in some ways. Thanks to Cameron Tilbury, William Coles, Nick Smith, Graham Harper, Annette Andre. I don't think Phil got back in time to listen to Annette's fantastic discussion of Donald Trump and the evolution and ascent or descent of man. Extraordinary. Trump and Nigel Farage could almost be the dark side of Dean Hagland and Phil Learness. Just raise that as
a possibility. It reminds me of the joke, actually, and the truth is out there, that one of the experts says about how, of course, evolution is a fraud. Man didn't evolve from monkeys. Look at who we have running for president. Man is becoming a monkey.
It's a devolution way, as Devo might have actually said, but those last two questions need to be asked. I think it's Tessa.
I feel like we could make up two new questions for Phil.
Gee, you already have. You're quite right. I was time jumping once again. Yeah. Time jumping into an alternate universe. It was quantum physicists gone crazy on that particular aspect. Of course, Phil Learness will return. We can tick the Autumn Flower Show. Not quite the future of the film industry and not really transmedia storytelling, but stay tuned. I'm sure things like that will emerge after the news from the Sky News Centre. A little touch of Billy Martin and Milk and Honey, and then the Showstoppers ain't nothing but a house party, or even a house peaty, perhaps, to Katie Dore and Tessa Snart and you, dear listener, and Penny Evans and the entire Snart family. Thank you. Can we say bye-bye?
Bye.